Funding for Think comes from the SMU Doctor and Master of Liberal Studies programs.
What's in your medicine cabinet? A bottle of Tylenol? Tums? Old antibiotics? Maybe some bright bottles of half-filled NyQuil? In the U.S., we love medicine. There are more than 300,000 marketed over-the-counter drug products, and there are more than 750,000 retail stores where you can buy those drugs. But which ones do you really need? And when is one better than the other? You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman, in for Chris Boyd. We're talking about choosing the right medication this hour with Dr. Roger Caton. He's an internist with Baylor Scott & White. Dr. Caton, welcome to Think.
Thank you very much, madam.
So since there are so many over-the-counter drugs, let's start with some categories. And let's begin with pain. What are some of the top pain medications you think everyone should have on hand?
The easiest one that doesn't cause too much harm to the body is usually Tylenol. Tylenol, it can do liver damage if you take it in excess, but usually if you can keep like a normal Tylenol, take one or two tablets every 8 hours, you won't exceed the amount of acetaminophen you need, and that'll be okay. A lot of people can keep Aleve, keep Motrin, keep Advil, keep aspirin, all in their medicine cabinet. If you're taking a lot of it, and by a lot, Aleve is twice a day, but if you're on it for months, you keep Motrin and you're taking two tablets every 6 hours, you run the risk of increasing your blood pressure, or an ulcer is one of the worst ones you can have from those medicines.
So how do you generally recommend people choose, though, between pain medications? Sometimes I feel like some work better than others.
Yes. For different situations, like a lot of people who have arthritis pains, or they get like knee pain, back pain, sometimes a little anti-inflammatory like Advil, Motrin, or Aleve is very beneficial. We just warn them to take it with food, or if they start having symptoms of like black stools or they get stomach pain when they take it, hey, stop. That's a sign that, hey, call your doctor. But a lot of people can take it daily without any problems. We just want them to know, hey, the safest one out there right now, Tylenol, even though it has liver issues. But Motrin, Advil, Aleve, great choice for people, but be aware of the side effects.
So what happened with aspirin? It used to be the top drug for headaches and pains. When did it get pushed out of the picture?
You and I probably wish to have Bayer stock because that was the best thing. Aspirin is still very advisable for back pain. You can take a low dose of aspirin up to 325 milligrams a day. You can even do twice a day full dose aspirin. Full dose is 325. You do it twice a day with the same guidelines for taking it with food and protecting yourself against an ulcer. But it is still recommended. Most people don't like to use it because they use the aspirin more for heart prevention, stroke prevention, other issues now, so they don't want to double up on their aspirin.
So there are some nighttime or PM versions of these drugs. What makes those different?
Well, like Tylenol PM, Advil PM, most of the times when they're connected, they have like a sleep additive. Usually it's like Benadryl where diphenhydramine is put in there. And it can be a simple medicine that's a little sleep medicine with the Tylenol. And a lot of people will tell you it makes them sleep like a baby. If you have any risk for confusion, older people particularly, then I tell them not to take the PM medicines because Benadryl can cause a little confusion as you get older. And the medicine that's Benadryl, the generic diphenhydramine, can also cause a little urinary retention. And for older men, that becomes a problem. You get urinary, you're getting up all the time to go to the bathroom.
In the middle of the night, too.
Yeah, not fun. You can fall.
Oh, man. Okay, so not necessarily recommended if you have some confusion issues if you're older.
But for your age group and my age group, even though I'm a lot older than you, it's a good medicine to have on board. It makes you sleep very calmly and no issues, usually.
Someone reached out on Twitter asking about how young is too young to give sleep medication to children or a PM version perhaps of something like Tylenol?
So like Tylenol with PM is mostly like diphenhydramine once again, which is Benadryl. Benadryl is safe in kids. With pediatrics, you have to dose it a little differently. It's based more on weight, not just age. And so you have to be very careful reading the instructions on the back. Some of the pharmacies will even put it in Spanish for you because on the counter it's in English. But if you're not able to read it, they can actually put it in Spanish for your weight base and everything. I personally have never given a sleep medicine to anyone under the age of 16, but I've given Benadryl for like itching and rash, and warn the moms and dads, hey, your child might be a little sleepy from this. Please be aware that it can cause sleepiness, you know, and those are the biggest things you want to watch out for in the youngster who might be ill.
Now, I want to talk a little bit later about sleep medications, but just on that topic, I know some people who've taken Benadryl, adults I'm speaking about, or for sleep medication.
Yeah.
Is that something that's a dangerous thing to do, or is it okay?
It's not dangerous. It's one of the first things we do for people who have significant insomnia. For sleep, over-the-counter, you see, what is it now? There's NyQuil, DayQuil, then there's the makers of NyQuil came up with their own snooze medicine. Then we have like Unisom, then you have the Benadryl, and then you have the herbals such as melatonin. If you are one who has significant insomnia, we recommend first starting with like melatonin.
Uh-huh.
It comes in 3, 5, 10 milligram tablets. Don't exceed 10, and if it's not working for you, as soon as, like, it may work for you the first couple of days, and then it doesn't work for you, then stop taking it. It's not going to be helpful. But it can be helpful for some people because it's a natural hormone triggered in your brain, and it helps. It's in the pineal gland, being scientific for a minute. Melatonin's produced, and it helps you rest. And when you're going to bed, that is secreted. So some people don't have enough. And so we say use the melatonin and it'll help you go to sleep. Most of the drugs, most of the issues when people are taking sleep medicines is they don't have what we call good sleep hygiene. You know, like hygiene, washing your hands. We're talking sleep hygiene, turning off your phone, turning off the TV. You're ready to go to bed, okay? And so instead, a lot of people are still actively thinking of other things, or they had just done their major presentation and they're all tense about it, or they're like, oh, I need to go study, or I'll read, or then someone's bouncing in. So we always tell people 30 minutes before you're about to go to bed, take one of these medicines. Otherwise, they're not going to work for you.
Now, back to pain. If someone is dealing with pain every day, whether it's maybe a back pain or related to arthritis, or maybe they don't know what it is, how long should someone keep taking Tylenol or Motrin or Aleve before seeing a doctor?
That is always a classic question, and one that my twin brother and sister-in-law are also docs, so we get these questions quite often. If your foot, say you tripped over something, okay, for an example, you had an injury where you know you did something, okay, then we let you go for like maybe 24 to 48 hours, okay? If it looks like it wasn't a big, it doesn't look obviously broken, it's a little swollen, we'll go, okay, 24 to 48 hours, do the rest thing, do the ice, compression maybe, elevation, use a little medicine. If you're still hurting within 24 to 48 hours, it's not getting better, see your doctor. But for like chronic back pain and chronic abdominal pain, people who take these meds for like 2 to 3 weeks and things aren't getting better, arthritis is a chronic condition, unfortunately. But if you suddenly have a change in your arthritis pain where the medicine's not working for you, then that's a time to call your doctor just to take another look and see, hey, is there something else going on? For abdominal pain, very specifically, because like I was mentioning, some of those meds can cause a lot of issues. If you're having a significant abdominal pain with your medicine and it's not going away and you're using it, you need to be seen, okay? I wouldn't wait more than like a week or so. That would be the longest I would wait for that.
Particularly if you're taking something, like aspirin that is known to have connections with stomach.
Yeah, I would be very careful about having someone come in, see me and say, hey, let's go take a look and make sure you're not having anything else wrong with you.
So in terms of chronic pain, a lot of people, and this is in the news today, are talking about opioids.
Oh, yes.
What is your advice for people now and how has it changed about taking opioids?
So, the thing is it's become more nationally recognized that people have dangers from narcotics. And a lot of times it's now in the age of affluenza, I hate using that term, but a lot of people will have drugs just sitting around at home, parents, grandparents, and specifically narcotics like hydrocodone, hydromorphone, which is dilaudid, morphine is sitting there. And because we do a lot of palliative care, there's Xanax, there's alprazolam, which is Xanax, or benzodiazepines, that's the whole drug class, is sitting at home. And people just steal them or borrow their parents or borrow their grandparents or their friends' medicine. Well, these are very regulated drugs for us. We as doctors get it's regulated by the Texas State Board of Pharmacy when we prescribe it. we are very careful about prescribing it to people. You don't want to go to multiple doctors, for one. It's a bad sign. It'll make your doctors very worried. They won't want to write you a prescription. You should go to one doctor for it so it's regulated and everyone knows what meds you're on. But the combination of narcotics, the big issue is respiratory depression, accidental overdose. People don't realize how strong these meds can be for some people. Some people are very tolerant to it, don't get me wrong. But these medicines cause people to get very sedated, and it helps with the pain. It can make you high. It can make you confused. There's problems with them. But if someone needs it for short term for acute pain, for like after surgery, after a fracture, after you just sprained your back, it's great. It's the people who need it chronically for long term pain relief or arthritis that we make them sign contracts with us so that we're the ones who are the only ones prescribing it so we know how to control it.
You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman in today for Chris Boyd, and I'm speaking with Dr. Roger Caton. He's an internist with Baylor Scott & White. You can join the conversation by calling 800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org, or you can send a tweet to @KERAThink. Coming up, we'll talk about the best place to keep your pills and why maybe that's not the medicine cabinet.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Doctor of Liberal Studies program for working professionals like Dr. Jeffrey Funk, exploring medical education for a new generation of learners. More at smu.edu/DLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman in for Chris Boyd. We're talking with Dr. Roger Caton. He's an internist with Baylor Scott & White in Dallas. You can join the conversation by calling 800-933-5372 or by emailing think@kera.org. Dr. Caton, most medicine cabinets are kept in the bathroom. That's where I keep most of mine. Is that the best place, though, to keep pills?
You and I, while we were off air for a minute, we were talking about some of the narcotic issues in alprazolam. One of the things are those are highly restricted drugs and can be sold by people, and it's one of the most common prescriptions to get stolen. So we actually recommend to people to put those drugs specifically into a secured area, like either a safe if you have it or a locked drawer instead of your medicine cabinet. And then keep your other medicines there because most people aren't going to steal Premarin, which is an estrogen for hot flashes. They're not going to steal your blood pressure medicine. They're going to steal your pain pills and your anxiety pills and your sleeping pills. That's what they're going to steal.
Wow. Now, also in terms of preserving the drugs, though, is the bathroom an ideal place in terms of the environment and the humidity?
Well, a lot of times a lot of people tell you not to put your prescriptions in the bathroom because of what you just said, the humidity, it can denature the medicine quicker. So we actually tell people sometimes write in your nightstand, underneath the nightstand, you can do it. Or if you're taking it with food, your medicines, in the kitchen, like in one of the cabinets next to your refrigerator or somewhere where you have water.
How about in the fridge?
Some medicines require refrigeration, but not most medicines. If the medicine says to keep in a refrigerator, yes. But otherwise, don't keep your other medicines in the refrigerator because it may ruin your medicine.
Okay. I just assume put anything you want to keep fresh in the fridge. I guess that's not.
No, I had someone put their cereal in the refrigerator too. Okay. I don't know if that helps or anything. I'm not a food guy, but I don't think you're supposed to do that.
Okay, I won't get the Neosporin out of the fridge next time.
No.
And what about containers? Does that matter? I know we're getting into the details here, but does it matter? For example, I order vitamins online and when they come, I might put the old pills in the new pill container. Is that?
As long as you know the expiration dates, then it's okay. Because a lot of times what happens, like you were just talking, and it happens with the Express Scripts or like those 90-day medicines, people will keep on filling their same bottle and they'll fill it and they don't realize that the one that at the very bottom is still like now expired. So you want to be a little careful on that part, just making sure you take the bottom ones out first, fill the like what I'm trying to describe is you have the bottle. You take the bottle with the remaining pills out, put your new pills in, and then put the older pills on top so you're using oldest ones first, okay, so that they don't expire is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, because I guess what I hadn't realized until I was reading a little bit is that I guess I'm taking I'm looking at the bottle and now it has an expiration date that could be wrong.
Yes.
On it.
That can happen to a lot of people, and then it's not either efficacious or it can cause you harm because it may be releasing an ingredient that now denatured and came out.
Like, are there certain drugs that are dangerous to take if they've been expired, or and ones that – I mean, should you ever take anything that's expired?
Okay. This is an interesting question, because one of my patients called exactly about this, and he'll know what, if he's listening to this, he'll know what we're talking about. He had a Benadryl prescription. Yeah. He just bought it over the counter, and it said expired 2012. And he called me, and he took it, before we got
reading
on the phone.
It? Or?
Yeah, but he took it, and he was calling me, and goes, it was expired in 2012. He took two of them. He slept really, really well because it – unfortunately, Benadryl, when it expires, it causes a lot more sedative effects, okay? So I was like, it's not really safe to take anything that's expired. And I usually go – I give people like – you can go up to 30 days. Some pharmacies will tell you up to 60, but I never let people go over 30 days on expiration dates usually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, to be on the safe side, because there are – they put expiration dates on the package for a reason. Like milk, right?
Yeah. Now, mentioned vitamins there. A lot of people have the recurring question of, should I take vitamins?
So it's very classic. I had a nice lady who came in. She has one prescription she takes from me, and she brought in all her pills. She has 26 different bottles of supplements she takes.
Gosh.
Okay. All these can interact with other things. They can cause you bleeding disorders. Some can cause you GI issues. So I always told her, you really don't need all these vitamins. Now, people who've had gastric bypass, they need specific vitamins like vitamin B12, vitamin D. Sometimes they can't do fat-soluble vitamins, so they need extra vitamins. But most people who eat a regular diet, a simple multivitamin would be enough. Vitamin D3, very important right now in regards to the bones, health, skin. We've seen it written, how much is too much, how much is too little. But most people would benefit from a little vitamin D. And then vitamin C and E, a lot of people will take extra during their flu season, vitamin C specifically. And that's okay, up to a gram a day during the flu season or when you're feeling ill is okay, but you don't need it every day after the whole rush.
Now, how does it work, though? There are some vitamins that I understand you get rid of the excess, and there are others that you don't.
So, like, if you took a lot of vitamin B12, for an example, or when you take,
which is in what food? Do you know what foods that's in?
They're in a lot of leafy vegetables. Okay. You can get it. But if you took extra pills, okay, of vitamin B, so like this lady, she took B1, B6, B12, and B50, okay? B50 has all B12, B6 in it, so she's saying B12, B6, B1, and B50.
Okay.
She had very bright yellow urine, and she's asking me, oh, but I think I might have a urinary tract infection. I go, no, you're spilling it all out. That's why your urine is fluorescent. So like with certain vitamins, you do spill them out through your urine. You'll see it. Certain vitamins, if you can't absorb it, you'll see them as little pills coming out in your poop. I'm sorry for being so descriptive. And then others, if you take too much, you can actually hurt your liver or your kidney.
So you do have to be cautious about overtaking vitamins. Mm-hmm. Now, how has it happened that vitamin D, it seems like at least in the last, I don't know, decade or a few decades, has become such a popular supplement?
So it was after we talked about osteoporosis for a lot of people. People were looking at what can we do to help prevent bone loss. So a lot of people know about calcium, but then a lot of people were reading in calcium, hey, you can also increase arterial plaque if you take too much calcium. So how much is a balance? So we always tell people like 500 to a gram of calcium a day, sometimes a little more if you don't have heart disease. Vitamin D helps with bones. So a lot of research has gone into vitamin D over the last year saying, hey, should it be 1,000, 2,000, 5,000 extra units? People who have kidney disease will decrease their vitamin D also. So those people need extra vitamin D. Okay, so people who are on dialysis will always tell you they're on extra D. They may be on prescription strength vitamin D. But this helps your bone mineralization. It helps prevent the takeaway of the bone. And it's a very beneficial drug. It also has some effects on just helping you stay more awake, some people say. I haven't seen that study. But other people say vitamin D at low doses with zinc, 50 milligrams, can be a natural way for people to increase their testosterone, especially men who may want to have a little boost. And it's about 2,000 units on there of vitamin D with 50 milligrams of zinc, but you have to get some sleep too in there.
Okay? Sleep's important. Mm-hmm. Now, I read that there's a pretty big gap in generation gap in terms of those who use vitamins and those who don't. What is the newest trend? Are more young people using it or less?
Amazingly, yes. Most, it's not the younger ones. Uh-huh. It is the millennials that we want to call it. They are on the blogs, and if they get ill, they'll bring me the information. They'll show me, but this vitamin will increase this. This will help me here. This will help me here. And I'm like, actually, you can stop. You're relatively healthy. You don't need all these vitamins. But it's usually the group greater than 65.
Yeah.
Or about 60 and over, actually. As people get close to Medicare age, they start taking more vitamins. Okay. And then it's the younger ones, like they're children, you know. And so it's the 20 to 25-year-old that's like trying to avoid coming to a doctor is the one who will take more vitamins.
Interesting, perhaps because they don't have good medical insurance.
It's a possibility.
Another area of debate about should you take it or should you not and how much it should be prescribed are antibiotics. Mm-hmm. You hear a lot of conflicting advice, especially about parents wondering with their kids whether or not to give them antibiotics. Where do you stand on that?
Well, first of all, when we give antibiotics, I always tell people, please take the full the whole course of antibiotics. A lot of people will take it for a few days, feel better, and then store it and save it for the next time they're not feeling well, okay? When we're giving you antibiotics, unless we said, hey, if you're feeling better after a few days, store it or something. Most people may not say that, but for some reason we may do it for people who have maybe recurrent infections or something. But most times I tell people, take your full antibiotic, go. When you're having a viral infection, okay, so like allergy season's on us, my father's a classic example of this. He gets a runny nose or a cough, and all of a sudden, I need my antibiotics. Mm. If it goes on for a long period of time and you are feeling sicker, you get thicker mucus, you get like gray, green, yellow mucus, you're having fevers, the cough doesn't go away after like 2 weeks or so, and it's getting really intense, then yes, antibiotics would be appropriate because you want to make sure you don't have an upper respiratory infection. But a lot of times we try to save antibiotics because as in the literature, as most people have noticed on the news, these multi-drug resistant bacteria are coming up. It's one of the reasons that we had that soap dispenser issue is that the soap makers were having a lot of issues with. It's almost like having antibacterial on your hand, and we're increasing resistance of common bacteria. So that's why the FDA actually told soap makers to stop putting that into the products that they were selling.
So how does that relate to the advice of take your full course of antibiotics? What happens if you don't?
Well, a lot of times people may relapse, and a lot of people will think they're getting better, and they'll stop, and then in a couple of weeks later, they're sicker again, especially people who have like strep pharyngitis and specifically urinary tract infections. People will say, oh, the burning stopped, or I don't need this anymore, and then they're back in again. Or we find out from people that you can also increase resistance because you took it for 2 days, you stayed at home, you didn't feel so good, you took it a week later, you took the other two pills, then you said, oh, I'm feeling better again, then you took another two. But you built resistance to that antibiotic,
and perhaps the bug itself got stronger.
Mm-hmm.
So, what should you do if you do need to dispose of drugs, whether it's antibiotics or anything else?
Well, don't flush it in the toilet.
Oh man, okay.
Yeah,
don't do what you do with your pet.
Yeah,
fish.
Everyone does that, but it actually goes into the sewer water and then goes into the water, and a lot of people do. Most cities, like I know University Park, Richardson, most of our suburbs have days where you can go and bring in your antibiotics to throw them away, like they do the batteries,
yeah,
like they do the computers. You can also bring it to your doctor's office and we'll dispose of them for you.
Oh, that's okay? A good idea. I hadn't heard about that. So instead
it depends on your doctor's office. Some may say don't do that, but if you call us and we will dispose of your antibiotics.
It's one more box that you need to have. I mean, in the house, you know, you've got your battery box with
a
pile of old batteries.
Yeah, for the recyclables.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Now, you're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman, in today for Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about our medicine cabinets and the pills inside them with Dr. Roger Caton. He's an internist with Baylor Scott & White. Join the conversation. Give us a call at 800-933-5372 or send an email to think@kera.org. You can also tweet at KERA Think. Coming up, we'll talk a little bit more about sleep aids and caffeine pills.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Graduate Liberal Studies Program, presenting a complimentary lecture series on the American presidential election in 2016 this fall with SMU political scientist and distinguished professor Dennis Simon. You can RSVP at mls@smu.edu.
You're listening to Think. I'm Lauren Silverman in this hour for Chris Boyd. The cure for most of our everyday maladies can be found at the drugstore. The trick is deciding which medicine is right for you. So that's what we're talking about this hour with Dr. Roger Caton. He's an internist with Baylor Scott & White. Dr. Caton, let's talk a little bit about stimulants. So caffeine pills, you go into the store, it's full of them. What do you tell people about whether or not to take stimulants?
My overall opinion is don't take extra caffeine pills. But I will tell you that people who have attention deficit disorder, who are already on medicines such as Vyvanse, Adderall, Ritalin, they are the ones who are at the highest risk to have a bad complication from taking added stimulants. And we've had people who've gone to the ER because of increased palpitations, racing heart rate. And for a few people, it's not a lot, but a few people can actually cause significant heart damage from these medicines. Well, occasional use of it, like if you're a relatively healthy person who exercises fairly regularly and you don't have any issues, fine. One or two stimulant pills maybe in a month when you're doing for a final exam, okay, maybe. But if you notice that you're getting tremors, meaning your hand shaking irregularly, you're feeling short of breath, your heart's racing when you just drink a Coke, you should not do a stimulant pill, okay?
It is something, though, that you see driving down. I say you're driving from Dallas to Austin. You stop in any of the gas stations, and there's shelves full of 5-hour energy and pills. And
and the drinks, the monster drinks.
Yeah, and the monster drinks. Mm-hmm. So.
And it's a very scary thing. Like, you'll see truck drivers, they'll say repeatedly that they take one Red Bull now, they'll take a second one 2 hours later, and another one. And you'll see these people are driving. They may be having chest pain. They're on the road doing it. And we have never been able to get people to restrict or regulate these drugs because they're not really under the FDA. They're considered beverages. And so, or they may be an over-the-counter medicine, like you said.
Supplement.
So they're not, yeah, a supplement, so they don't qualify for FDA regulation.
Now, we got an email that came in to think@kera.org. Someone wrote, I've got three daughters under the age of 10. How do you know if a sniffle is a cold or if it's allergies? And what should kids take for each?
Kids, now that they have children's Claritin and children's Zyrtec out, you can actually do the children's Zyrtec and children's Claritin. You just have to do it based on the weight on the back. It's relatively safe. If it is mostly clear allergies, your eyes are swollen, you have itchy eyes, you have a little scratchy throat, but it's mostly clear drainage, like it looks like water coming out of your nose, then it's more likely to be allergies. And we had, as you know personally, probably, and I do, we had a very rough allergy season this summer. And I think it's going to continue through this fall because we had a lot of rain and then got dry, then it rained. So we have a lot of issues with allergies this year.
And a lot of mold because of that,
oh,
right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So with allergy medications, do you have to take them like Claritin for a long time to see if it actually works? I've heard that taking it, you know, one morning and then not taking it the next might not be effective.
When you're having an acute attack, we sometimes even recommend like Claritin, taking it twice a day for 5 days and then going back to once a day. Allegra, a low strength, you do the same thing. But when you're having an acute attack, you do need to like wait a few days to see if it's going to help you. It's not like the commercials where, oh, I can breathe, I'm fine. No, you're a little stuffed up still. It's going to help you. But then some people will stay on it for years because they say that I have worse allergies and all of a sudden it's not working. Your body does develop some kind of tachyphylaxis, meaning it becomes resistant to it, and so you have to switch your antihistamines around. Sometimes Claritin won't work for you 1 month. You'll go to Allegra, or you'll go to Zyrtec, or you'll go to Benadryl. And I'm sorry for using trade names, but you understand what I'm saying. And then that's where we tell people, hey, just because it didn't work for you right now, it may work for you in the future, but switch right now.
You can join the conversation by calling 800-933-5372, which is where we'll go now to the phone. Steve is calling from Dallas. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, so I had heard and I've read before that since vitamins are not FDA regulated, producers can label them however they want and essentially not get caught. I had a teacher who had informed me that vitamin B and D and C might actually just be soy products and have no beneficial anything to them. And I wanted to know if that had any truth to it or not.
Actually, both Laura and I are nodding. That is true that vitamins are not regulated, so the manufacturers can't actually put anything in there. We recommend to most people to go to like a Nature Made brand, which is actually regulated. There's the commercial where there's one that's followed by the United Society of Pharmacists, USP. If you see that on the back of your vitamin that you're buying, then it is technically at least been endorsed by a pharmacist that they may have the right products in there. But there is a chance when you're overseas or even in the States that some of the medicine you're buying is not a supplement.
So if it says USP, that means at least it has been...
It's been endorsed by the United Society. It's a Society of Pharmacists.
Okay.
And so at least it has a little higher recommendation that this is a safer product.
We have another email question. What causes people to be allergic to antibiotics? It seems my wife is allergic to almost all types. Can you eliminate that type of allergy?
Yes, you can eliminate some kind of allergies. They're called desensitization. When you try to do it specifically, we have those. We usually have to refer you to like an infectious disease doctor or an allergist to like reduce your risk of allergies to medications. A lot of times when people say they're allergic, though, it's adverse reactions like nausea, vomiting, or my joints hurt, or I feel all yucky. True allergies are like having a true skin reaction, hives, getting short of breath. A very bad allergic reaction is when your lips actually swell or your tongue swells. That's called angioedema, and that's an emergency. You don't wait and call your doctor. You call your doctor as you're going to the ER because you don't want to lose your airway. But there are ways
having yourself with an EpiPen.
Yeah, that would be a good thing if you have the EpiPen available. Yeah. But one of the things that we do want people to realize, like you were saying in regards to the allergies, is you can get desensitized to allergies, but it's an allergist or a referral may be needed to an infectious disease doctor who does it.
Okay. I'm curious, in your medicine cabinet at home, what's the most high-tech thing you have in there?
I'll be very honest. I don't take a lot of pills. Uh-huh. I have I take a cholesterol pill named Zetia because I like my food, so I know that I'm going to have to keep my cholesterol down. I also have one baby aspirin. I'm over 40, but I just do it for prevention. And then I take Allegra, and that's all I have. That's all I take.
That's it. You have a thermometer in there?
And what is in my medicine cabinet? Yeah. I have a thermometer. I have mouthwash. I have my hair stuff. It's thinning, but I still carry hair stuff in there. And then like a cologne and speed stick, I think, is in there, and toothpaste.
So not a ton.
I don't keep a lot of medicines. I do have an occasional, if I remember to buy vitamin D, I'll have vitamin D there because I think it's important. And then occasionally I'll take a vitamin B12 just because I think, this might help. But it's not because I'm deficient.
So then you aren't one of those people who is a sort of doomsday drug
hoarder,
stockpilers. Yeah, because if you look online, there's the basics you can have in your medicine cabinet. And then there are people say everyone should have X, Y, and Z in their first aid kit in case of disaster.
Now, in my little medicine bag that I take to go see my I'm a concierge doc for Signature Medicine at Baylor. And so I go do house calls. I do have stuff in my bag that I do take along for me. And I do recommend people having like Keeping Benadryl available for allergies when you have an allergic reaction, Benadryl is really helpful. Cortisone 10, mild steroid cream to help for hives that may come up or very bad itching mosquito bites. Antifungal creams for like jock itch, etc. we keep. That would be very beneficial for people. Tylenol, I would keep. I would keep a baby aspirin because if you were to have like stroke symptoms or chest pain, you want to take something at least to protect yourself till you can get 911 to take you to the hospital.
What about for basic cuts and scrapes? Do you tell people to put on something like Neosporin or just wash it with soap and water?
Soap and water is the easiest one, but I do have a lot of people who use Polysporin, Neosporin, or Polymyxin, one of those, and I'm okay with it because they do heal faster, but it can also increase your resistance to bacteria sometimes. If it's a simple cut, I'm okay. I think it's a great idea, Neosporin, but I tell people at least – for my patients, a lot of them have my phone, so they'll take pictures of their cuts.
Oh, fun. You get a lot of text messages.
Yeah, which, you know, you're like, that's not really a good idea. It's not a secure way to do it. So you have to tell them, please don't send it. But a lot of people will send me pictures, and then we'll figure out what's the best idea to do. But having Neosporin available and Band-Aids at home are always a great idea with first aid ointment.
So actually, let's go to the phones now, people.
Okay.
A few people are calling. The number is 1-800-933-5372, and we'll try and get to Karen, who's calling from Fort Worth. Hi, Karen.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had a quick question about the 5-Hour Energy product. When you look at the ingredients, depending upon which one you choose, they could have as little as a half a cup of decaf, if you take the decaf, or the equivalent of about a cup of coffee. And all the rest seems to be sort of natural vitamins and that. Could you just comment on that? Are they that safe for you, the things in something like that?
Okay, thanks, Karen.
Well, like with the vitamins that the nice caller asked us about, the same thing goes with Red Bull and other things. It could be a host of ingredients that are in there, but you're not sure what the ingredients are. Most of the decaffeinated Red Bull have a lot of herbal drinks or herbs in them, and they say these are all to help you get more hyper, like ginseng is one that a lot of people claim, oh, it'll make you more alert. They're not regulated. That's the only question I have, and so that's why I endorse Red Bull. I don't endorse 5-Hour, but you know, some people like it, and I'm not going to be able to stop anyone from using it, but I would take it with caution, whatever you take. Moderation is key.
Dr. Roger Caton is an internist with Baylor Scott & White. He also does house calls. Dr. Caton, thank you so much for coming in. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Ms. Silverman. It's always been a pleasure. And I hope everyone, if they have a question, please call you, and I'll gladly answer it later.
Oh, thanks so much. Think is produced by Stephen Becker, and it's engineered by Shelley Knavy. Samantha Guzman is associate producer. She also answered your phones today, your calls today. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington, and you can reach us email think@kera.org. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great day.